This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. This week, we have an interview with Dallas Stars right winger Patrick Sharp. He tells us about his first year in Dallas, their playoff push, and if he's still the most handsome man on his new team. Then the panel returns to talk about whether the St. Louis Blues are for real, how teams should handle their goaltenders in the playoffs, and whether Phil Kessel really is the most overrated player in the NHL.
Okay, today we have Patrick Sharp of the Dallas Stars on the podcast. Welcome, Patrick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, you know, playoffs are on the horizon. The Dallas Stars are flying high lately. This being your first year with the club, just curious how you felt about Dallas' style of play and maybe why you guys have been so successful so far.
It's been a fun year up to this point, no question about it. All I can tell you is that playing against the Stars the last 2 years in that Central Division, I could tell that they were a team that was headed in the right direction. They were always a difficult team to play against, whether it was their physical play or fast tempo that they play with, some skilled players. You could tell that they were going to be a good team down the road. So when I had the opportunity to join the Stars this summer, I was excited about it, and it's been a very good year up to this point.
Now, possession stats are a big thing in hockey media. You guys are one of the best teams in that metric, and in the past it's shown that Stanley Cup winners have been very high, if not one of the top two or three teams. How much do you know about advanced stats, and how does it feel to know that you guys fare pretty well in that?
It feels good, I guess. I don't really know much about the advanced stats, to be honest with you. Not that I don't believe in them or trust them, but I'm pretty inexperienced when it comes to reading them or really understanding what they mean. But I do know that coming from a team in Chicago where we stress the puck possession, hang on to the puck, make plays, don't ever give it up unless you really have to, led to some good things there. So the fact that we're doing that here in Dallas can only mean good things.
Right on. Now, obviously your Chicago time, you had a lot of success there, and part of the reason Dallas wants players like you is because you've won before. Just curious, from the time you had in Chicago winning cups, when it got down to those final series, were there any lessons that you picked up that maybe you've imparted on your Dallas teammates, or if somebody should ask you the question about what it takes to win the cup, what would you tell them?
Just that it's so close, it's so difficult to win. You can't win the Stanley Cup in the first game of the first round. It's really it's a long process. It's about staying true to your team system and your game plan from start to finish, not only the game, the period, but really the two-month process that it takes. So, every shift is a battle within itself, and just because you may lose a game or two, you feel like you're going to lose a series. It's not always the case. If you win a couple, it feels like you're going to go on and win the Stanley Cup. That's not always the case either. So try not to get too high. Try not to get too low. That's something that we've stressed here in Dallas this year, and just play with that even keel and play our team system.
Excellent. Now, you're not the only former Blackhawk on Dallas. Obviously, Johnny Oduya is there as well. Was it nice to have somebody that you had played with before on the team this year? Do you find yourself hanging out with Johnny?
Yeah, Johnny's a good friend of mine. We played a number of years together now. We've got two Stanley Cups together. So shortly after I was traded, I had heard that the Stars were interested in bringing Johnny in as well, and gave him a call, sent him a text, tried to get him on board. And, I think we've had a lot of fun this year. Learn a lot from him off the ice, the way that he takes care of himself, his body, his nutrition, his training methods. So, he's a good friend, a good player on the ice, and he's been a big part of our success this season.
Excellent. And final Chicago-related question. You played for Joel Quenneville with the Blackhawks. Now you have Lindy Ruff, another longtime coach that's had a lot of success in the league. How would they compare as coaches? Are they similar? Are they different men in their approach?
Similarities would be that they're both well-respected coaches. They've been around for a long time. Their record speaks for themselves. They both believe strongly in their system, in their staff, their team. They're fun guys to play for, very intense, very animated, and nothing but respect for the both of them. So I've been fortunate to play for those two guys. Also played with Ken Hitchcock to start my career, so that's a pretty impressive list of coaches that I've had.
Indeed. Very important question here. Better mustache, Lindy Ruff or Joel Quenneville?
That's a good question. Sometimes Lindy's got a little bit more than a mustache. He likes to switch up the facial hair. So, you know, I guess it's all personal preference. I'll give it a 50-50 toss-up.
There you go. Back to your role on Dallas. What did you want to bring into the dressing room when you joined this team? What did you see as your role coming in as a veteran?
I just wanted to fit in. I just wanted to come down here and fit in on and off the ice the best way I can. And I feel like I've got some pretty good experience to my career, and I can add some things, whether it's vocally or the way I play on the ice. But, you know, my main focus was coming down here, adjusting to play on a new team. You know, it's easy when you play in the same spot for 10 years like I did. Everything's the same. Everything's a routine. A lot of familiar faces, whether it's teammates or people in the organization. You know, my wife and I had a family and a lot of friends in the city of Chicago, so life was on autopilot, so to speak, in Chicago. Coming down to Dallas, everything was new. So just fitting in on and off the ice, and I tell you that the Stars organization made that pretty easy to do. Right away, I felt welcomed. I felt at home, and it's kind of led to a good season.
Excellent. Is there one player on Dallas, I'm not sure if it would be a young guy, that you didn't realize was as good as he is until you actually got to the team?
Yeah, there's a handful of guys, to be honest with you. You know, didn't know much about Klingberg except for his highlights from last season, but you know, he's a guy that's fun to be around, fun to play with. His skill is off the charts, and he's got that confidence to make plays that really help our team in a lot of different ways. Alex Goligoski's been a rock for us on the blue line. He's had a solid season. We've got some younger players that I didn't even hear of until training camp this year. Matthias Janmark has had a good, strong season for us in his rookie season. You know, I can go up and down the lineup. The organization seems to be in good shape as far as young players, prospects, a good mix of veteran guys. General Manager Jim Neal has done a great job in that department.
Excellent. Finally, you know, when you were in Chicago, a local magazine dubbed you one of the 50 most beautiful people in town. Have you got that accolade in Dallas yet? Have they come calling?
Well, luckily I got Seggy on the team, so any kind of magazine covers or fashion shoots or stuff like that, we just defer to Tyler Seguin, who's more than happy to take on that role. And I know my mother was proud of all that stuff in Chicago, but I like to think of myself as a hockey player first, and that stuff is just for fun and secondary.
There you go. Perfect. Well, thanks so much for doing this, Patrick, and good luck the rest of the way.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm Ian Denemy today with Ryan Kennedy, and from the comfort of their couches at home on the phone, we have Ken Campbell and Matt Larkin.
I'm actually in bed.
Even better. That sounds even more comfortable.
Is it a futon?
Reclining chair. Bring it over, thanks. I was just getting a beer, guys. Sorry.
From who? Your cat?
No, my wife.
Must be nice. Our NHL playoff preview is set to hit newsstands this week, and inside we have the St. Louis Blues, ranked number 8 in our Stanley Cup power rankings. However, the Blues have won 5 in a row and 8 out of 10, and they look like they could very well win the Central Division. So, guys, given this recent run, is it time that we became believers in the Blues?
I think it is. You know, just because in the playoffs, what wins? Defense and goaltending. And right now, the St. Louis Blues are ruling in both of those areas. They've given up 1 goal in 5 games. 1 lousy goal in 5 games. Mikhail Grigorenko is the only guy who's scored on these guys in the last 5 games. And, you know, I mean, I just think that, you know, they're a team that has been playing playoff-style hockey forever now because of the division they're in. They're in the toughest division. And they're, you know, they're bringing it right now. So I certainly think they should be a serious contender. Will they win the Stanley Cup? who knows? But, you know, I mean, this is a team that I think has learned from its last couple of years and knows that it has some pressure on it to get past the first round into the second round, maybe the third round. And they're a team, I think, that could do it. I mean, if Robbie Fabry's hurt badly, that really hurts them. And if Bo Meester's out with a long term with a concussion, I think both of those things will hurt them. But they're built to, you know, they're built to compete.
You know, it's interesting because we've believed in the Blues for so long that they kind of became the new San Jose Sharks, where you just kind of stop believing and say, like, well, when you do it, then we'll have faith in you. But, you know, like, what happens if Duncan Keith gets a long suspension and they end up playing Chicago in the first round? Does that boogeyman of the Blackhawks, all of a sudden, you get a limping Chicago team that might not even have Corey Crawford in net? Like, if the Blues actually get some early momentum, then I think you do have to say, like, well, I mean, they do have a ton of weapons. And the one thing that they do have now that they didn't have a couple of years ago was, you know, a sniper who, if you need a goal late, that's the guy you give the puck to. And that player is Vladimir Tarasenko. He has evolved over the past couple of seasons where you can safely say, that's the guy we need to score a crucial goal. And, of course, you've got that great ensemble cast around him as well.
I'm really on the other end of this one, guys. I'm at the end of my rope with St. Louis. And to me, this conversation, we could have played this conversation 3 years ago. We could have recorded this 3 years ago and played it for our listeners, and no one would be any the wiser, because the same situation keeps arising. This team is regularly dominant in the regular season. They're regularly amazing defensively under Ken Hitchcock. They're so good at suppressing shots. And when it comes time for the playoffs, something is missing from this team. And they have added Troy Brouwer this year, who has a Stanley Cup ring. But other than Brouwer, there's only one other guy or two other guys, depending on health, on the roster who's even been to a conference final, let alone a Stanley Cup final. I really wanted the Blues to pursue Justin Williams in the offseason for that reason. The experience in crunch time, it just doesn't seem to be there. There's a mental block with this team. And the core that's been struggling, it's the same. Other than Colton Parayko and Joel Edmondson, big guys, strong guys, I like those additions this year on defense. But at the same time, you know, we can say they've learned, and it's going to be different, but do we know that? I don't think we know that until we see it. And even from a goaltending perspective, we've seen year after year this tandem approach. It doesn't seem to work, whether it's Brian Elliott or Jaro Halak or Jake Allen. No one seems to get it done in the playoffs when it's crunch time.
Yeah, well, I think those are all pretty legitimate concerns. I mean, they haven't done it. Neither is the Washington Capitals, then, so I guess we should say that they're not a Stanley Cup favorite either.
They have Justin Williams, though.
Okay, they have Justin Williams. All right. You know, I mean, that and 25 cents will get you a cup of coffee. But I just don't. You know, I just don't know that you can say that anybody's, you know, a contender or a favorite to win it now, because everybody's so tightly packed. And I mean, they got to do it at some point. And I think that this looks like a year when they can do it. And I don't think you can underestimate the value of a healthy Alex Steen in that lineup as well. I mean, this guy can be a beast, and he plays big in big games. He is the kind of guy that really, really, I think, brings it when the games are more important. And I think he's a guy that's going to have a monster playoff.
And I agree about Steen. And another guy that I've really enjoyed this year since he's been back from the broken ankle is Jaden Schwartz. He's a little bulldog. I think he's a very underrated player. He seems to make Tarasenko better when they play together. And Schwartz has been almost a point-per-game player. And his return seems to coincide with the Blues really getting hot. And that's the thing. You know, I'm knocking their Stanley Cup chances, but for no tangible reason. On paper and according to the numbers and according to the talent, this team should be good. It should be contending for the Cup. It should be contending every year. But there's just something missing. It's a je ne sais quoi.
Guys, we mentioned goaltending a couple of times. And Matt, last week on the podcast, you talked about this. And you wrote this week as well about the theory and the success that teams have when they choose one goalie to ride during the playoffs. And the Blues, as well as the Anaheim Ducks, are two teams that kind of have a goalie tandem. So when the playoffs start, let's start with the Blues. Which goalie should they go with and make their number one, win or lose, as long as the playoffs go?
I'm going to go with Brian Elliott. I think he's undervalued as a goaltender. I think for whatever reason, he just never seems to get that chance that that I believe he deserves. One stat that always stood out to me is from the Rob Volman book, Hockey Abstract. I believe it was, you know, an edition from 2 years ago. You know, a great sort of tome of analytic stats. He had compiled a list of all the goaltenders and how often they got blown out in games and how often they had sort of, you know, games where they would get pulled early after, you know, two goals in the first 10 minutes or whatever, three goals in the first period. And one of the best goaltenders in terms of not getting blown out was Brian Elliott. But he always seems to have to reprove himself. And, you know, Jake Allen, great young goaltender, no question there. But I'd really like to see Brian Elliott be given the reins. And like you said, like, if you're going to go with one goalie the whole way, I think that really kind of changes the you know, the mindset of the netminder that gets chosen. I'd like to see what Brian Elliott could do right now if given, you know, free range.
Yeah, like right now we're talking about having two goalies, and it almost sounds like the tone of it is that it's not a good thing to have two goalies, that you can only have one, you know, that you have to have this one guy that you can only turn to. Well, you know, I mean, last year, if the Chicago Blackhawks hadn't been able to turn to Scott Darling in the first round after Corey Crawford was terrible in the first game, they probably wouldn't have won the Stanley Cup. They probably wouldn't even have gotten out of the first round. I don't see this as being a problem at all. I see this as being a great thing. I think this is a great thing. And I think teams that win, of course they do it with one guy, but usually it's because that one guy takes it and proves to them that it's his turn, that it's his time and his turn, and he's gonna carry the team. And I think that one of these guys, one of these four guys, and I suspect that Elliott will get the start will get the chance to start in St. Louis, because we're down the stretch right now and he's got the hot hand, that, you know, he'll get the crease for the first couple of games. But you know, I mean, but what if he's not very good in game one? I mean, this all goes back to the stuff we talked about this St. Louis Blues team in the past, right? Is that, you know, once the playoffs start, the you know, the sticks get gripped a little tighter, and this team just can't seem to win. So to me, I think it's great if Elliott, you know, for whatever reason is lights out down the stretch, and then in game one allows, you know, four goals on 22 shots. Well, they've got a guy they can turn to who might be able to just turn the whole thing around the way Scott Darling did last year.
But what if the very fact that he's got someone breathing down his neck is the reason why he's letting in all those shots and getting pulled in the first period or whatever disaster could strike in game one?
Well, then I would suggest that's a real flaw in Brian Elliott's game and in Brian Elliott's makeup and his personality and his ability to play in this league. If you can't play with pressure on you, and if you can't turn in your best performance in the playoffs because you're worried that some guy on the bench is going to take your spot, then I would suggest you don't have the makeup to lead a team to a Stanley Cup anyways.
Well, it's a good segue, because Brian Elliott has an .897 save percentage in the playoffs for his career.
Right.
He started 17 games, he's made 19 appearances, and he's at .897. And that's one of the reasons I would rather go to Jake Allen. And the other reason is that Allen is still your long-term guy. He's a guy in his early to mid-20s. He's the investment. And to me, it's almost, if you're giving Allen the shot, which they did last year for six games as well, you're thinking about your future and you're staking him, or letting him stake his claim long-term. I think that's what the Blues should do.
Well, we're in the present, though. I mean, and they got to win games now. And Brian Elliott's the guy. And actually, Brian Elliott probably would have been their goalie, their number one goalie, undisputed, if he hadn't gotten hurt earlier in the season anyways. So it's not like he's kind of come out of nowhere here. And I think with what he's given, his age, his experience, the way he's played this year, I think he deserves that shot. I think he deserves the net in game one of the first round, and deserves a chance to show the St. Louis Blues what he can or can't do in the playoffs.
I also wonder, you know, when it comes to these situations where you have two pretty solid goaltenders, is, you know, like Ken, you were talking about with the pressure of that other guy, but, you know, with Crawford, you know, he knew that Darling wasn't going to be the starter, but it did give him time to sort of recuperate mentally and figure out his game, and obviously Chicago went back to him and had success. I wonder if that's what has to be the case in not only St. Louis, but Anaheim as well. I think, you know, if you're John Gibson, who I feel it's Gibson's crease to lose. You almost have to have the mentality going into the playoffs of, okay, if I bomb in game one and they go to Freddie Anderson, that's cool. I'll support Freddie, but once I get my shot again, I'm not giving it up. And, you know, it sort of goes back to what Matt had blogged about with one goalie getting the vast majority of wins en route to a Stanley Cup. I think, you know, whoever St. Louis or Anaheim chooses, even though they have two very good options, the one guy, even if he falters right away, if he gets that second chance, you can't be bouncing back and forth. I don't think we've seen that really been utilized to success. Although I will say, up until a couple of years ago, we would say no team ever comes back from a 3-0 deficit in a series. You know, it's only happened once or twice over the span of 60 years. But now we're seeing it with like semi-regular frequency. So I wonder if this is a year where, you know, something that we've never seen before actually comes through.
Yeah, if you can win with two goalies in the regular season, I don't see why you can't win with two good goalies in the playoffs. But I mean, the playoff mentality is such that when one guy, takes hold of things, usually he's the guy that ends up hanging on for the rest of the playoffs. I mean, it's you're playing every other night. It's 2 months. You don't have back-to-back nights. You don't have 3 and 4 nights, so you don't really have to play that other guy. Even like a lot of times, even if a guy's on a hot streak in the NHL, or he's, you know, clearly the number one guy or whatever, they'll give him a break. They'll throw the other guy in for one of those back-to-backs or a 3 and 4 nights or a 5 and 7 nights. But that's not the case here. And if one guy, I think, proves he can carry the mail, then he's going to be the guy that does it.
To me, what's interesting is if you're a goaltender, you know, you're above average goaltender in the NHL, and let's say 9 out of every 10 games you play quite well. What if your one bad game is game one? What if it turns out the next 9 games you play in the playoffs would be great, but you happen to play a bad one game one, and because you have a short leash, you get hooked? That's the mentality that I'm kind of worried about.
Yeah, and that definitely could happen. But again, I mean, it's up to you to show up for game one, you know? I mean, to me, it all goes back to what I talked about with the mental makeup of these guys. I mean, if I've got a guy that's worried about a backup taking a spot, or, you know, can't get up enough for game one that he can put in a good performance, then I'm not sure he's going to be a guy that's going to lead me to a Stanley Cup anyways.
And let's think about Jonathan Quick in Los Angeles in that San Jose series 2 years ago, where he was getting bombed in the first couple of games, and then he turned it around. He became Jonathan Quick again,
yep.
And that was it. Bye-bye, Sharks.
All right, let's move on and talk about a player poll that Post Media recently conducted, in which Phil Kessel was named the most overrated player in the NHL for the second consecutive year. There are some obvious problems with the methodology of the polls. We won't get into that. But just want your take on whether you think Phil Kessel is really the most overrated player in the entire NHL, or if he's sort of a victim of having played the prime of his career in an intense media market and has become something of a whipping boy.
I think it's probably more of the latter. I mean, I'm not a Phil Kessel fan. I never have been a Phil Kessel fan. Like ever, but I don't think he's, you know, I think he does get, you know, a little bit, you know, picked on a little bit for a lot of reasons, and I think this is one of those cases. It's interesting, you know, I sort of keep my own stats on crucial goals that guys score and crucial offense that they provide, and this year, I mean, Phil Kessel has scored 8 goals this year that have put Pittsburgh Penguins in the lead in the game for good. So not the game-winning goal by definition of the NHL's game-winning goal, but truly the game-winning goal, the goal that provides the margin of victory for the rest of the game. So he's got 8 goals and 8 assists in those situations, and that's like right near the top of the league. I think in terms of goals, there's like Ovechkin, Taves, and maybe one or two other guys that have more goals in that situation than Phil Kessel does. And not many guys have more points. He's got 16 points on those kinds of goals. And I think that's pretty substantial. And he's not a guy who shoots a lot in a shootout, so you don't really see him doing that much. But his numbers in the playoffs are pretty good. Like, they're pretty good. They're actually really good. And in the Olympics last year, he was really good until the end when the whole team was terrible and he wasn't the only one. So I'm not sure that, you know, like I said, I'm not a big Phil Kessel fan. I think he makes too much money. And in Toronto, he was completely miscast as a guy who could lead the team. I thought this year, you know, playing in Pittsburgh, you know, behind the likes of the Crosbys and the Malkins and with all those other good players, he would have been much more productive this year. I agree with all that, but the most overrated player in the league, I think that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me as well. You mentioned the salary. It's funny how that can and really put outside pressure on a guy, because if you look at how Kessel has played lately with Carl Hagelin, I mean, they've been deadly for the Penguins at a time where Pittsburgh has needed them since Malkin's out. And you know, Crosby's doing great things as well on a different line. But if you take away Kessel's salary, if you take away what he was traded for, you know, I mean, the end goal in Pittsburgh is to get a Stanley Cup. And if you can bring in a scoring threat that plays away from Crosby and Malkin, I mean, if you're facing Pittsburgh in the playoffs, that's kind of terrifying. You got to figure out how to shut down three lines once Malkin comes back. So for me, it's all about the end result. And I know it's tough to divorce those two things where you can see how much he makes and whatnot. But,
well, especially when you're talking about how a guy's overrated. I mean, yeah. That's probably one of the first things you're going to point to is how much money he makes, right?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, like, I mean, I think he can be valuable in that, you know, assuming he plays the way he can. And as you were saying, he's had success in such tournaments in the past. I mean, if he gets them the Stanley Cup, then, I mean, how overrated can he be, even if he's not the man?
And the funny thing, too, is if we think about what the definition of overrated is, doesn't it imply that the guy is very highly rated? And to me, Kessel, at least for a year, I mean, it's been more than a year now since he fell out of favor in Toronto. He hasn't been highly rated for a long time. So how could he possibly be overrated?
Well, I think it's a generally speaking thing, and you know, for a while there, he was considered to be, you know, one of the top players by virtue of the fact that he scored so many goals. In his first couple of years in Toronto, I think there were a lot of people that contributed to that. I mean, he was scoring a lot of goals, and I get that people think he's overrated, and he probably is overrated. And in my opinion, he is overrated, but you know, definitely not. I don't think among the most overrated players in the league. But I can see where that's coming from. I mean, you watch Phil Kessel play, and you know, guys, we all watched him a lot when he played for the Leafs because we, you know, a lot of us all go to their games and everything. And how many times did you watch a game and you know, think, you know, I wanted to see more from Phil Kessel. I wanted to see, you know, him be a difference maker tonight. I wanted to see him not just skate down the right side of the ice and take that shot, that low percentage shot from, you know, 45 feet out. You know, I wanted to see more from him, and I saw that a lot, and I've seen that a lot in his career. So I get that he's overrated. I get that, because I think he is. The most overrated, that, like I said, I think that's probably a little harsh.
And I think, too, it could be sort of a backlash against players that are under the spotlight in Toronto. Because I remember there was a poll several years back, I think it was Sports Illustrated, and Dion Phaneuf was rated the most overrated player in the league. So I think it's almost a case of players seeing all the coverage that guys get on a lot of league teams that weren't very good, and they assume that these guys are put up on pedestals.
Well, but for me, that one's actually pretty accurate. The Dion Phaneuf being the most overrated player in the NHL, that's one I think you could really make a case for that one. You know, there's a couple of guys in Ottawa that are pretty overrated, you know.
Yeah. But again, who's rating Dion Phaneuf really highly right now? Other than Brian Murray acquiring him.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you've got to apply some standard to it. So if the guy gets traded for, you know, a fairly good package, and he makes a lot of money, and he's got a good contract. And, you know, people like Brian Burke a couple of years ago were just talking about him in the same breath as Sidney Crosby. Well, that sort of contributes to him, to his rating, which I think generally is a lot higher than it should be. And is that his fault? No, I don't think so. It's not his fault that he makes all this money. I mean, he didn't hold a gun to anybody's head and tell them to give him a contract that he gave them. You know, he didn't tell them to make him captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He didn't tell them to put him on the top two pairing and give him all this ice time against really hard players to play against. You know, but that's the reality of the situation.
Let's wrap things up this week by taking a few questions from our mailbag. You can tweet questions to us at any time using the hashtag THNTalks. First question, maybe we'll let Ryan start with this one. And the question is, who is the best defenseman in this year's draft? Is it Jacob Chychrun or Olli Juolevi or maybe even Mikhail Sergachev?
Yeah, this is a fun debate. And, you know, right now, Olli Juolevi is the top defenseman when you talk to scouts and GMs, and obviously they're doing a lot of meetings right now. You know, at the beginning of the year, Chychrun was certainly the top defenseman. We thought he would be maybe even a top two pick. And, you know, I mean, he's had a pretty good year, not a great year. I think it's more Juolevi has been great. He was an all-star at the World Juniors where he won gold with Finland. He's been excellent for the London Knights in the OHL. Mikhail Sergachev is very intriguing as well. He doesn't get a ton of press, but I kind of see him as like an Ivan Provorov for this year. Provorov obviously taken by Philly last year in the draft. Just a really solid all-around guy. You know, plays physical. He can put up points, defends really well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Juolevi go first, and then one or two picks later, it's Sergachev, and then somewhere in the number 10 spot, we see Jacob Chychrun, which for whatever team is picking then, I'm sure they will be super psyched to get a man-child like Jacob Chychrun with you know, a number 10 or 11 pick.
Yeah, it could be like the Cam Fowler thing all over again, right?
Yeah.
You know, like I've been talking to scouts too, as you have, Ryan, and one scout told me that he said if Chychrun does belong in around that number 10 area. And if you rate him there, everybody says, oh, you know, you're crazy. What the heck are you doing? But he said if the scouts, you know, are really being honest with themselves about how these guys have played this year, that's about where Jacob Chychrun belongs right now, at number 10, behind those other two guys. And I think Jacob Chychrun is going to be one of those guys that on draft day we're going to sit there and we're going to see the first three picks and then four and five and six and seven and eight, and we're going to be going, okay, when's this guy going to get picked, you know? And he may very well fall into the double digits, like 10 or maybe even after that. So there's usually a guy every year that happens to, and I think this year is the year that it's going to happen to Jacob Chychrun.
Yeah, and let's not forget, a couple of years ago, the guy that really fell was Philip Forsberg, and look what he's doing now in Nashville.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, next question. In the Eastern Conference, who has the best chance to beat the Washington Capitals in the playoffs?
I'm going to say the New York Rangers, only because of the history, because they seem to have Washington's number in the playoffs. And again, like if they do meet each other and they get into a series, and say New York takes game one in Washington, then everything starts to tighten up a little bit. All those old demons start coming back, and then maybe they put a seed of doubt in their mind. So for me, just because of the past, I would say the Rangers.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, because I predicted that they would miss the playoffs without Jenny Malkin, but I think Pittsburgh is a team that could get under Washington's skin. There'd just be some adrenaline involved in that series, especially just the Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin matchup. We haven't seen it in the playoffs since 2009, I believe, and it was pure magic back then. And Pittsburgh's been arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference for the last couple of months, at least from a possession standpoint. I would have said Tampa Bay, but I'm very worried about the loss of Anton Strahlman from that top pair. So I lean towards Pittsburgh. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I wonder about Washington, eh, guys? Like, I don't wonder about them, but, like, you know, they're going to be on cruise control for a while when the playoffs start. They will have been on cruise control for a while, and everybody else will have been playing, you know, and particularly, like, whoever they're playing against is going to be a team that's been playing playoff hockey for the last month and a half. And, you know, the Caps, it's interesting. I mean, the Capitals had the President's Trophy clinched before any other team in the East had a playoff berth clinched.
Wow.
Think about that. They had first overall clinched before anybody else had a playoff berth clinched. So they're going to be cruising into the playoffs, and you know, I wonder if it's going to be a case of might take them a you know a little while to get things cranked up again, but they're the best for a reason. So I suspect they'll you know they'll be able to turn it on when they want to.
Yeah, I do like Pittsburgh as an answer simply because of you know Crosby and the history those two teams have, but. You know, going off of what Ken just pointed out, what if they meet Philadelphia in the first round? Those teams just played. Philadelphia got a shootout win. I mean, the Flyers, like, they're just a nasty team, and I can see that becoming just a slugfest. And, I mean, Washington's, you know, they're big and they're burly, but, you know, they can score goals. They want to have a skill game, you know, if they can. I just see like Philly dragging the like in the first round, Philly could just drag them into the mud like they did to the Penguins a couple of years ago in that wild series. And you know, right off the I think if it happens to Washington, it's in that first round where, as you say, Ken, like somebody's just battle scarred already and Washington kinda waltzes in and just, you know, has reality smack them in the face in a couple of games.
Well, if Holtby plays the way Fleury did a couple of years ago in that Philly-Pittsburgh series, then Washington's going nowhere.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, too, to see if the Cavs, I mean, if they can back up what they've been saying. And what they've been saying for the last couple of months is that Barry Trotz has been instilling in them this mentality to not count their chickens and treat every game like a playoff game. And it's great. I mean, it could just be lip service. It's sort of saying the right thing, but the only way we'll know if they can back it up is once we see the game.
And I mean, Barry Trotz isn't exactly Tolt Blake when it comes to playoff success either. You know, I mean, he hasn't had a whole ton of playoff success himself. So, you know, there's another question right there, too.
All right, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for the questions. Gentlemen, thank you, and we'll talk next week.